Non-Native Ceramics. Written by Silent Walrus. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Full Metal Alchemist. Rating, Mature. Relationship, Ed Roy. Also tagged for Developing Relationship, Home Renovation, Adults with Jobs. That's like the opposite of PWP. Part 22 of Caveat Emptor. Chapter 1. Ed opens up the catacombs on the 1st of September, clapping his hands and then watching the stones part like the swish of a theater curtain, pouring over each other to reveal the dark, blocky tunnels beneath. He peels up the entire floor of the courtyard behind the president's building. They're going to have daylight down here and space to move, and they're in the middle of HQ already, so controlling access is less of an issue than if this were some unsecured civilian plaza somewhere. As it is, this project is being protected under the impenetrable veil of regular old construction work. Ed's disguise is his CEC hard hat and sewer jeans, the access point surrounded by forests of portable guardrails and tape. And for all anyone passing by cares, they may as well be here solely because the president's office wants a better toilet outflow. Which is probably how all this got built in the first place, Ed thinks, as Ross gestures to one of her lieutenants, and he directs the first of the squads down the steps. No Branson and Raven for this round. Technically, Ed as a civilian shouldn't be here today either, as the soldiers do a clearing pass to make sure nothing's taken up shop since these underways have been sealed. But Armstrong's happy to have him unseal any doors and manage any potentially blocked corridors while he takes point as the combat alchemist, if anything does leap out at them. So they go down. Ed breathes in deep and regrets it. There's no stink of blood or rot now, but the dank stone and dust and dirt is telling him there should be. All the bodies got cleaned up, obviously, and the labs investigated and sealed off, and they might even have maps made from the initial cleanup operation. But as they move inwards and start putting up new lights, it still feels like there's some kind of miasma down here, oppressive. It doesn't get better. Even with them stringing new lamps down to supplement the existing lights, the entire place feels murky, and the air is stale where it doesn't stink. Ross and Armstrong were the ones in charge of clearing it all in the weeks after the eclipse, and know what they're doing. And Ed suspects that between their measured briskness and elaborate formality, it's currently the only thing keeping them all from going slightly feral down here and just roaming the halls with torches and pitchforks and appropriately primitive bloodlust. Ed's recognizing more and more faces in the squads, soldiers who were there on the eclipse, which makes absolute sense to assign, but the mood down here isn't exactly anxious so much as anticipatory. The good old Amstrian, come and try it. Ed finds himself almost hoping they do find some goddamn homunculus still down here, if only to break the fucking tension. But they don't find anything, and Ed finishes the day exhausted, as drained as if he really had been fighting hand-to-hand down there instead of just doing a bunch of stairs and wiring. He goes back to Roy's, sacks out before Roy even comes home, and gets up the next day to do it all over again. So the work is crap. Ed expects to get used to it, and in any case, it's not going to last forever. But the catacombs never stop feeling oppressive, even though most of them are pretty much identical to the service tunnels Ed's in and out of 20 times a week with the CEC projects. He's been inside HQ itself a bunch of times too, but HQ was almost entirely rebuilt and looks completely different inside, even if they tried to preserve most of the outer architecture. No more fancy wood-paneled walls, and the floor varnish is a completely different color, too. All the massive craters outside were partially covered over with extensive landscaping, too. Two new gardens built up, and the rest paved over with entirely new configuration of walkways. But down here, the bones haven't changed. This is where Ed burned up his alchemy. This is where Al died. Of course, Al's perfectly alive and well now, and Ed can still do alchemy. They learned pretty damn quick that by destroying his own gate and thus necessitating the exit back onto the physical realm through Al's, Ed more or less cemented the link between their souls instead of severing it, and is now possibly incapable of dying unless Al does. They've also theorized that whatever alchemy he's doing is being somehow drawn through Al's gate, but that doesn't seem to be doing any different, and neither of them are going to pop back in to see Truth anytime soon to check. Ed doesn't really think about it. Maybe one day the alchemy will pop off him like a badly applied spare tire. But until then, the absolute best course of action is to not poke it with a stick. But down here, he is thinking about it, and a whole lot else besides. He doesn't know what to do about it except push through, let it make him as thorough as possible, to make sure they don't have to do this again. But it engenders a gnawing, angry helplessness in him, sapping strength, making him impatient and bitter, and no one's failed to notice. Ross keeps frowning at him when she thinks he isn't looking, but Ed can barely keep himself in check. It's like a fever. Something you can't get at, can't fight, you can only wait it out. The rest of the universe decides to agree, and 100 other little things in Ed's life start going wrong. Shoelace snaps, bakery accidentally gives him the cabbage buns instead of curry, bank sends him a letter about how they got bought by some other bank and they're transferring his accounts, and now he'll have to trudge about 12 streets over to get his cash instead of going around the corner. His stupid port rash comes back. He's sanitizing the damn thing every night, but wearing his work jeans daily must be more of a bacterial irritant than he expected, so he has to just bandage the whole damn inner thigh. And on Wednesday morning, he accidentally drops his last bottle of the shower oil stuff that makes his hair behave and spills it all down the fucking sink. This means he doesn't have any more shower oil stuff until Al sends him more. Which is bad, because it is the only shit that can make his hair behave without turning it into a separate slug organism slimed onto his scalp. It would be manageable with his old length, but like this, he can't even braid it properly, and without the weight of longer hair to make it hang straight, the cowlicks try to send it all out at a 90-degree angle to his head. Dunking it in water doesn't make it dry any smoother, and tying it back as much as he can only produces a nuclear halo of flyaways. So he goes to work looking like he punched his face through a sunflower. The catacomb re-excavation itself quickly settles into a thoroughly boring grind, which he should be grateful for, given that something could still fucking leap out and eat them down in Bradley's old stomping grounds. But documenting everything, mapping all the electrical, plumbing, and mechanical connections, and then examining them for structural significance is just fucking slow. At least when he was reading books all day, he was learning shit. Even if the specific shit is sometimes just This book was written by some rich guy who had no actual idea what he was talking about. He is still reading books, at least, which is something for his brain to latch onto that isn't paranoia about the catacombs and all associated memories thereof. He's hitching a ride to HQ in the car that comes for Roy every morning, which is a daily 30 minutes of uninterrupted bumpy reading time. Only currently Roy doesn't come home until late and isn't eating dinner out with anyone. Not with Ed, either. Just coming in with his little glasses already on, dropping his jacket on a kitchen chair, knocking back a mug of coffee and going straight to his study with an entire packet of folders under his arm, still in his uniform pants and shirt. Ed follows him in there, because what Roy should be knocking back is one of his paint-thinner cocktails and fucking Ed until he can't so much as spell catacomb. What, are we about to invade somewhere? Who's even left?
Quarterly budget review,
Roy says distractedly, not looking up. He's got the folders spread out in front of him, already writing on a page half full of notes. Like he's been scribbling at it in the car and was still inside one uninterrupted thought process.
It'll be this all week.
Ed pokes him in the shoulder. Don't you have people to do this for you?
They did do this for me,
Roy says pointedly, rustling a sheaf of papers.
And now I'm reading the summaries of their findings. So many dependents diversified after last year's tactics. The landscape's changed.
He adds, as if mid-conversation. Like Ed's supposed to have read the reports himself.
If two of three major state supply companies now hold critical infrastructure contracts, for Marugo as well, we need to know.
Because he made such a big damn deal last year and withheld the entire defense budget to force Parliament. So now, of fucking course, everyone affected ran like hell to alternate sources of income, lest he do it again. Ed puffs out his cheeks at him, unsympathetic. It's all Mustang's own fault, as usual. Throw a big damn firebomb of a power move, get chased around with his own damn consequences after. Roy gets to the end of his page, dips the pen in the inkwell, and finally does look up at him. He frowns.
What happened to your hair?
Your plumbing, Ed tells him sourly, and quits hanging around like a hopeful groupie and goes to flop down in Roy's bed with his own papers instead. He's not going to compete for attention. Okay, fine, running the fucking military is something they should all take seriously, and on the whole, it is probably not a net cosmic good to pull Roy off his stupid notes and onto his ass instead. But it'd sure make Ed feel better. It does give Ed another solid chunk of time with his own books. He'd be a lot more pissed, only, well, he is in Roy's bed. The past several weeks of which Roy's accepted seamlessly, without any hint of surprise or expectation that Ed might better fuck off to his own place. Which is good, because if Roy's not gonna fuck him, the least he can do is timeshare some mattress. And also, probably for the best, given Ed's pretty sure if he had to sleep alone right now in the apartment where Al isn't, he'd burn the whole place down before sunrise. It's hardly 20 minutes later, though, when Roy comes into the bedroom and starts undressing, dropping his undershirt in the laundry hamper and heading off into the bathroom. The shower turns on. Ed blows out a breath and drops the magnetic resonance treatise he's reading over his eyes. He only closes his eyes for a second, but he realizes he's almost fallen asleep when Roy sits down at his hip, smelling of soap, and rests his palm on the crown of Ed's head.
Are you upset because I made a hair comment?
Ed pulls the papers off his face with a thwop. I'm upset because you could have been 6 inches deep in me for the past hour and you aren't, he snaps, which makes Roy crack up so hard he folds over like the withered goddamn roach he is.
Oh my God. He wheezes. You really are a, what did they call you? A sex lemming?
Ed whacks him with the papers. I had a shit day. I want to feel good.
You're not even aroused, Roy says as he rolls over onto the bed, still laughing. You don't even look like you want to be.
Oh, I'm sorry. Should I have been lubing up in here waiting for the high and mighty flame alchemist to finish drawing his blotter and come bestow his benevolent penis on me?
Ed throws his hands up, the treaties dropped onto his chest.
Please, let the rapture commence.
Not a chance, Roy says amiably, propping himself up on his side next to Ed. I've drunk so much coffee today, I think an erection would kill me.
Ed knows he's being unreasonable, but he doesn't want to be reasonable. He wants to be dicked. You have two functional hands.
Roy silently holds up his right hand, which, it turns out, as Ed focuses on the dark and bulky thing, is encased in a wrist brace. It's Ed's turn to crack up, half involuntarily. I've been icing my wrist since noon, Roy says peaceably, as Ed snorts helplessly into his palms. And will be all week, probably. Why do you think I carry around expired naproxen?
Where are your damn secretaries? Do they not let you have typewriters?
Ed rolls onto his side and grabs up Roy's other hand, angrily starting the tendon stretches.
He even showed Roy these way back when, the slacker. And don't think you're getting away with it, he threatens as Roy's stupid moon face goes incredibly pleased with himself as he looks down at their hands. I know all about this stupid anti-fuck agenda of yours, and if you think for one second you're going to get me to beg.
My anti-fuck agenda, Roy says in a high-pitched voice, then zips his own lips like he's sucking some kind of laugh lemon. Ed glares at him.
Are you going to try and deny it? Deny all your little plots and plans? I know how you work, bastard.
Roy gasps. Excuse me. I have to call Parliament. Then gives up and guffaws 5 minutes straight as Ed gets back to whacking him with the treaties. My agenda, he keeps saying, trying to make clumsy grabs for Ed in between fending off the papers. And when Ed pauses to roll it up for more effective violence, he succeeds in pulling Ed in, trapping the treaties between them and Ed's automail between his calves.
Absolutely not, Ed threatens,
though Roy doesn't seem to be able to make any further moves due to trying not to laugh in Ed's face. You're right, Roy says, very seriously. We should just lie back and drift off peacefully to a wholly fictional tale about how the last time I used a typewriter, a second lieutenant had to be escorted to the infirmary. Ed raises the treaties again. Or, Roy says equably, I can get on you, fail to achieve erection, nod off attempting oral, receive a concussion not unlike that of Lieutenant Harrow's from your encouragements, and in a resulting stupor tomorrow, inadvertently sign the pay scale reallocation that Ralk keeps trying to shove under my nose, which will give us about a week before we enter another civil war. Is that your agenda? Ed glares at him.
Oh, now you're making it my fault?
You like when I take my time with you, Roy says, comfortably peremptory, ruffling Ed's hair back from his forehead and only tugging a little bit when his hand gets caught in the mass. I like it, too. 10 minutes of tired jouncing, all for some mess to clean off the sheets. Wouldn't you rather wait? I promise I'm yours this entire weekend. Ed doesn't want to be persuaded. But this close, he can see the broken capillaries in Roy's eyes, the way the skin shows gray around them, when he's washed off whatever it is he rubs on every morning. You're completely fucking useless, he swears, dropping the treaties and picking Roy's hand back up to vengefully resume the stretches. Yes, yes, all sins are mine in multitude. Roy plucks at Ed's hair. Really, though, what happened? Did you try to alchemically dry it or something? I did not alchemically... I fucking ran out of hair stuff, Ed grumbles. Drop the stupid thing and it spilled all down your stupid sink. It's fucking Jingy's stuff. Smoothing oil.
Hmm, Roy says. We may have to expand diplomatic relations. I think my hand's stuck.
Serves you right, Ed mutters, subsiding. I'm holding you to the weekend thing. And start switching hands when you write. It's not that hard.
Maybe there's something.
Roy gestures vaguely at his acres of girly shit, completely ignoring Ed's helpful advice.
For hair, at least.
Ed perks up, then hesitates. Torn because he really does hate the prickly, staticky, tangled feeling, and he holds a gallon of that shit with him from Jing for a reason. But what Mustang puts in his hair might as well be shoe polish. Is it sticky?
I have no idea. You'll have to go through and see if any of it is even for hair, Roy says nonsensically. At least two of them are saddle soap.
What? Why the fuck do you have saddle soap? Roy sighs expansively.
I made the mistake of one too many remarks about the dryness of my skin on the last trip out to the Eastern Border Consortium. Havoc and Brita were generous with their solstice gifts.
Are you kidding me? Ed says, yanking Roy's hand off his head and immediately scrambling up to go look at the most overburdened dresser. They spent money on all this?
I never should have promoted them, Roy mutters,
rubbing his face with his unsplinted hand.
Or given them access to the office's discretionary fund.
They don't actually manage to find anything significantly helpful, though Roy does move them to the bathroom to make Ed sit in the tub so he can leverage a tactical offensive with water and a steel comb.
Are you joking?
He says blankly, when he discovers, as Ed warned him, that wetting his hair only makes it harder to comb.
What did you do before you had access to exotic hair oils?
You think I did anything? I was goddamn 14. I didn't use to wash my hair for weeks or brush it.
Good gods. Suddenly, I have a whole new appreciation for how infrequently you patronized our office.
Hey, I washed the rest of me. Ed jabs a finger at his stupid thigh, where he's taking the opportunity to sanitize the damn thing again. I can't not wash the rest of me. You leave an automail port alone for 5 fucking seconds, it gets infected.
And not the hair. Surely you were paid enough to purchase shampoo.
You try getting anything but bar soap in goddamn train stop inns. You want to see what happens when you use bar soap? Go ahead. You'll never see your hand again.
And us already at a shortage,
Roy mutters. The straps on his brace briefly snagging on Ed's hair as he reaches past to futilely scoop a bit more water from the tap. It's not exactly sexy, and Roy's increasingly plaintive attempts with the comb are definitely closer to a municipal lice inspection than a relaxing head massage. But Ed hooks his elbows over Roy's bony knees and tries to enjoy it anyway. Roy seems to realize that Ed humoring him in this isn't going to produce results, and lays the comb aside to stroke through his hair with his fingers, resting his splinted hand on Ed's shoulder. Ed watches a water droplet slowly follow the curving panels of his automail knee, the port rash a livid purplish spread just above the lip. It occurs to him that lying on a man's bed, fully clothed and complaining about the lack of sex is not, in fact, the approach most conducive to getting it. He wants Roy to look at him. He wants Roy to like what he sees. He'd been lying there with his work pants still on and an oil stain from today's lunch on his shirt's collar. It'd be kind of embarrassing if that did get Roy randy. It's not like Ed wants a man with low standards. But he wants Roy to touch him. He wants Roy to grasp for him, to dig in so deep it'll bruise.
Ed turns his face and rubs his cheek against Roy's forearm, blind. And Roy cups his chin in his good hand and tips his head back, pressing a kiss to Ed's forehead, his temple.
"Entitled little brat," he murmurs.
"I better see God this weekend," Ed says, not opening his eyes. Roy laughs softly, rocking their heads a little side to side.
"As if you've ever needed my help with that."
Ed turns in his grip, looking up into Roy's eyes. "I want you," he says. And Roy's not laughing at all when he bends down and kisses him. And kisses him. And kisses him.